Vegas, baby, Vegas!
At the end of the game, you count up your money. That's how you find out who's best.
If all my bets were safe, there just wouldn't be any juice.
The point spreads, the prop bets, the teasers, the parlays. From Vegas to you, this is Behind the Bets.
Welcome back to another episode of Behind the Bets with Doug Kazarian, presented by DraftKings, America's top-rated sportsbook app. All right, so it's been a busy week. We touched on the U.S. Open with Wes Reynolds, and also Matt and Lou were in for the UFC, the big final Apex card before they go to Fight Island. But we have Mr. Executive Director coming up. We go through week one, recap that, look ahead to week two, play a little baby bankroll bonanza. I am in first place. I got the win. And special guest, Mike Greenberg of ESPN. Greeny, we all know his radio show. Obviously, we know him from Get Up, but he's hosting a new original series, Better Days, on ESPN Plus. The show will premiere a new episode every Thursday in September. So the second one is out today. And if you think you know how this story is going to end, I bet you have no idea. Now, I know that's a little bit of a corny pun, but it's fascinating. And Greeny, we're going to talk with Greeny in a moment, but it's really cool content. Obviously, a lot of listeners to this podcast have a betting background or into the betting space. So something, it's a really cool story, but I don't want to give away too much of the interview. And Greeny touches on how unique this series is. But I encourage everyone to go check it out on ESPN Plus. Really a fun watch, so to speak. And then after Greeny, we'll get into John Murray and wrap things up with the baby bankroll bonanza.
Stop. Hammer time.
I now have the honor of welcoming in Mike Greenberg, who you know from basically every ESPN platform, did SportsCenter for a while, of course, hosts Get Up right now in New York, and also Greeny, his new radio show, and now something that overlaps with our current audience, Better Days on ESPN Plus. And Greeny, I'm fascinated by the approach to it, and someone who's kind of a TV nerd, as I like to say, it just sort of the thought process behind it and just how you went about sort of going through the lens of experiencing the better for the first time on air.
Yes. Thank you, first of all, for having me, Doug, and the honor is mine. The show's premise was that it's not really about gambling. It's about gamblers. And we all know that gamblers are among the most fascinating people in the world. And they have been depicted historically in all kinds of different dramatic pieces in fascinating ways, going back to Damon Runyon and Guys and Dolls and all of that. So that was what was presented to me initially. They said, we have an idea to do a show like that. And I said, I love that idea. That is a fabulous take on it. So we decided the key is to tell the stories. So the stories are told really two ways. First and foremost, they're told in the first person by the gamblers themselves, the winners and the losers, the wonderful stories and the not so wonderful, because all of us who gamble have had experiences on both sides of that ledger. So that's first. They tell the story. And the conceit of it is that when I first sit down with them, I don't know the story. All I am told is this guy's name is Bill, and he's from Las Vegas, Nevada, and you're going to find out what happened. He's got a story about gambling, and you're going to find it out. And that's the conceit of the show. And so that's one way the story is told. And I think that what I have seen, and it's been edited beautifully, is my legitimate surprise, because every single one of these stories has a twist, and some of them have more than one. My legitimate surprise, I think, really plays well. I think it plays well into the presentation. And again, for that, I take no credit. That's been brilliantly done by the people who produce and edit the show. The other piece of it that I will admit to you now, I was skeptical of when they first presented it to me, was we want to do dramatizations. We want to depict the story. So while the person is telling his or her story about gambling, we have little dramatizations. We have actors playing that person and playing other people in the story. And I will admit, my first thought was, unless that's done unbelievably well, that sounds so hokey and so cheesy that it makes me very nervous. But I took a leap of faith because I really like the people who created the show and produce it. And I thought, they'll get it right. And to my everlasting delight, they've knocked it out of the park. That's become my favorite part of watching the shows. And I will tell you that I host it. So I voiced it and I do the interviews, but I didn't see any of the dramatizations until they sent me the final cuts of the episode. So I was waiting with bated breath to see how that would come out when they sent me the first one. And I now think that's the best part of the whole thing. They did it just brilliantly. So those are, for those who haven't had a chance to watch the show on ESPN Plus, those are the two ways these stories are told. It's told in the first person by a gambler who has had a harrowing experience, some of them wonderful, some of them far less than wonderful. And then there is a dramatization where actors actually recreate part of the experience. And the way that has been intertwined into the telling of the story, I think, has been done magnificently. And again, for that, I can take absolutely none of the credit.
Well, you know, I'm glad you went to that, because I think, to me, that was so interesting, because of when you're in this space and, you know, it's a visual medium as much as anything. And so we have shows on our platforms that try to circumvent certain limitations, like Numbers Never Lie started out as like a whiteboard thing. The Matthew Berry's fantasy show, they have puppets because sometimes there's video restrictions. And obviously the gambling space, remember, for all those that are listening, you always heard Oakland or Buffalo. You never heard Raiders or Bill. So there's always ways you can go about, but this was bold. To your point, you were very apprehensive because it had to be done right. And it is. And I think it's so effective. And the first part of what I asked about initially is just your strength of one of many strengths of as an interviewer in radio and live TV, is so you're going to experience it live on camera. And I think that connects with the viewer because obviously they're experiencing it live as well. So it's a fascinating approach. And then obviously the reach is great too, because of all the storylines and just to be able to get all the people behind these infamous bets or wagers. I guess, you know, aside from what we already meant, what has surprised you the most about like the culture of betting that you obviously know, but that you were caught off guard with, or you couldn't understand the degree of something?
Well, so there are, there's a lot of different ways to answer that question. So you are a gambling expert. I'm not. I grew up going to the track. I had a father who loved my fun. I was growing up, my father loved horse racing. He loved harness racing. And so I grew up going to the racetrack, but we did not go to the thoroughbreds. I never went to a thoroughbred race in my entire life. Wow. Until Mike and Mike went to the Kentucky Derby in whatever year that was, sometime in the early 2000s when I was in my 30s. But I grew up going to the Meadowlands and going to Roosevelt Raceway as a kid in New York. I'd go with my father would take me. And then when I got old enough to go with my friends, we would go all the time. So I grew up, I fully understood the culture of, not of horse racing. I don't know horse racing the way the insiders know it. I don't know the trainers. I don't know that. I know how to bet. I know how to read a racing form. And I know all of the elements of gambling when it comes to racing. Like anyone else, like any other normal sports fan, I have gambled throughout the course of my life, certainly in college and all of that, up until I started working, honestly, until I started working in this job. And then I really stopped. And the primary reason I stopped is I felt I'm hosting a big national show that Mike and Mike in those days, with my name in the title, I work for ESPN. It did not seem appropriate, I thought, for me to be doing a lot of betting, because I thought it could seem to people as though it was influencing the things I was saying and the way I was covering stories. I just thought it seemed inappropriate for me to do it. I love going to casinos, and I'm in Vegas or in other places now. There are a lot more opportunities to do that, including in Connecticut, where I've lived for the last 20 years. That I do, and that I'm totally comfortable doing and love, and I fully understand that. I have left a lot of money at blackjack tables all over the country. But that's what I meant when I said the show is not really about gambling. If it was a show about gambling, then you should host it. Well, this is a show about people, you know, and right. So what I was trying to get is I want to understand the mentality behind the decisions that these people made when they were making these bets. Because the people in the show, we filmed four episodes. So mm-hmm. You'll meet four different people over the course of the month of September. None of them are the people I used to see at the track growing up, right? None of them were the guy with the racing form and the cigar firmly implanted in the mouth. And none of them are that person. These are people who made very unusual gambling decisions, and they explain why they did the things they did. And those I found fascinating. So I think that the people who would be listening, regular listeners to this podcast, who are much more interested in the very strict specifics of gambling, this show is not aimed at them. I hope that they will find it enjoyable, but I think the show is aimed at anyone. Anyone who likes an interesting story about sports, I hope, will find this show entertaining and appealing, because it's really about people and the crazy things they do when they have action on a game, or in some, in one case on the NCAA tournament, so on a whole bunch of games, the 14-team parlay, and the way it affects their thinking and the things that it makes them do. And I think that's something everyone can relate to. So I don't know. That was a very long-winded answer to your question. I'm not even sure I actually answered it. But that to me is the philosophy of the show and why I felt that I could do it, even though I might not be the first person you would associate with gambling.
Well, no, I think it's a good point, because it, you know, we talk about even on Daily Wager that obviously is gambling, has all the flying graphics and everything. We, like this week, we have focused mainly on the NBA playoff games, did a little on the NHL, and did some US Open. It's reflective of TV ratings, for lack of a better parallel. But like our best bets, we'll do like obscure things, maybe a WNBA here and that. We're trying to throw a wide net. Now, in these kind of opportunities, you want to uncover something that's extremely unique and extremely interesting, but it also has to appeal to a wider audience. So if you did like a full-blown feature on the why the guy bought a half point on a football game, that's probably not going to sell and move the needle for an ESPN platform. But if you tell an enriching story, I mean, if you compare it to anything, 60 Minutes, whatever, there's different varieties of topics, and no one is a quote-unquote expert of whatever mining, but the reporter and the journalist knows how to uncover the story behind it all. And that's where your expertise lies in a lot of things. And that's one of them, and it makes it fascinating. And go back to what I earlier said about just the real time experience of it. So that the horse racing one, and it says you have you had an NCAA tournament one with a parlay. What else can we expect in terms of at that front, the backgrounds?
Well, I don't want to give away the punchline of the NFL one, but it is already on the platform. As you and I are recording this conversation, it has been on the episode I'm thinking of has been on ESPN Plus for almost a week. So I'm hoping people will be encouraged to see it, and each one of them has like a crazy twist. But so I don't want to give away what happens, because I hope that it will come as big a surprise to anyone watching it as it came to me when I found out what actually happened. But in the most broad sense, one of them is about that was placed on the infamous Kentucky Derby of 2019, where the horse gets, where the inquiry and the horse gets knocked down. One of them is on a parlay, a 14-team parlay bet in the NCAA tournament. One of them is on an NFL guy who makes the enormous mistake of making a huge bet on a team using his heart and not his head, and pays a very significant price for it. And then what am I forgetting? What is the fourth one? Oh, the fourth one actually has to do with fantasy. So okay. So it's not even really traditional gambling. It has to do with fantasy. It's a money league, but it is based in fantasy, fantasy football. So there really is a little bit of disparate sports and stuff like that. But the thread of commonality of all of it is gambling, and I think we all know this, will make people do some crazy things. And and these, all four of the people that I interviewed do some really, really crazy things.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And actually, I know the gambling world really appreciates over intertwining that, because the fantasy people try to say it's so different, it's so separate, but it's like, no, you got action on the game and we think it's the same. So it's like a funny debate back and forth.
I'll just say this about that if I could. Sure. Like the stigma that has been connected to gambling throughout my lifetime has never really made sense to me. And I will tell you what my thinking on it was. I was raised by I developed my passion for sports primarily from my father, who was a crazy sports fan in every conceivable way, and didn't gamble particularly, because it wasn't legal and easy to do, and wasn't the sort who would go find a bookie someplace, but loved going to the track and loved going to casinos, and would talk about the point spreads on football games all the time. And mostly he said to me once at a young age, to regulate people's decisions in that area, what we're trying to convince people, the argument against it is that people may make bad decisions with their money. People make more bad decisions with money than they do with everything else combined, long before they were gambling and well beyond gambling. So the idea that we would not take advantage of all the benefits, this is just my thinking, the idea that we wouldn't take advantage of all of the benefits of legalizing gambling and generating all of the revenue that it generates, and we are starting to see that movement now, and embracing it rather than keeping it in the shadows, casting a light on it to try and get rid of some of the seedy element that has always been connected to it, because in large part because of its illegal nature. I'm delighted that it is coming out the other side, and I'm delighted that it is now mainstream enough that we have shows like yours and podcasts like this one, and that we can talk about it. And I will tell you that on my show in the morning, Get Up, we did for the very first time ever, when we did our division previews. So the most standard thing in the world to do. I mean, every sports show for the last 40 years, before the NFL season starts, one day we're previewing the AFC East, and one day we're previewing the NFC West, and we're doing a division. This year, for the first time ever, we included the odds. For the very first time ever, we included, and this is what Vegas says is a favorite, and we included the odds for all of the teams. And I made note of that, and I thought, that feels like an important development. That is a step in, a big step. It may not seem like a big deal, but it feels like a big step towards the continued relevancy and social acceptance of gambling, which I personally have been in favor of forever. So I was very happy to see it, and I'm delighted to be involved in it to whatever degree I am with the show Better Days, even though, again, it's really not a gambling show. And I say this in all sincerity, like a gambling show, someone like you should host, or someone like Scott Van Pelt should host, or someone who is much more versed in it. I understand it, but it's not in my blood the way it's in your blood. This show is about people, and what the people are involved in is gambling. And that's why I felt good about doing it.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. I mean, that's very nice of you. I think it's what we're going to learn as time evolves, as people are equipped. Yeah. There's people who are like, obviously extremely expertise in the area, but may not be polished on television. And we're learning that as we grow the space, kind of like the analogy was brought to me back in the late 70s when ESPN was founded. Like, there were people who were comfortable on air, but they hadn't done 3-hour and 1-hour shows. So it was almost like you just have to grow and create a new ecosystem, so to speak. But no, look, I obviously everyone listening here and I myself am we're annoyed all the years of the stigma of bettors. But you're right, the arrival of it on SportsCenter, the arrival of it on other ESPN shows and other networks and broadcasters weaving it in instead of like a under the radar reference is all part of the overall acceptance and overall kind of arrival of betting. But look, you're going to uncover all the great stories. I think the culture of betting has different levels. Like you said, the guys you went to the track with, you saw these are different. But is it amazing to see what people would bet on and how crazy they would get along those lines and fascinates it?
Well, when you meet my Bengals fan, awesome. and the price that he paid for his fandom, he answers the question better than I can. Again, I'm not trying to be coy, but I really want there to be an element of surprise in these episodes for anyone who hasn't watched them, because that's really the key to them. There's a big twist, like where the story begins and where it ends. No one will know unless you know the story. Some of these are reasonably well-known stories. Like I've noticed after I shot the interview, I filmed the 4 interviews in 2 days at the end of July. After I did that, I looked these guys up and I found that there had been local coverage of the different things that had happened to at least some of them. So they're not stories that no one knows, but they're certainly not stories everybody knows. I didn't know any of them. And people will find huge surprises, like huge dramatic twists. So there's this wonderful dramatic arc. And again, gambling and gamblers have been dramatized that way very romantically forever. I mean, as a kid, I will never forget, my parents took me to see Guys and Dolls, a revival of Guys and Dolls on Broadway, I don't know, sometime in the late 70s when I was 10 or 11 years old. And I remember thinking, Skye Masterson, Nathan Detroit, these characters, they seemed so cool to me. All they did was they shot dice and they went to the track and they, you know, they tried to hide it from people who were, you know, telling them they shouldn't do it. But that was all they cared about. And they stayed up till 4 o'clock in the morning. And like, I thought that was fabulous. I romanticized the hell out of it. And Marlon Brando played Skye Masterson in the movie and Frank Sinatra played Nathan Detroit. And I was hooked.
Right.
So that's my vision of gambling and gamblers. And I understand that isn't the entire reality of it, but our stories are very different, but they are still, they have that dramatic arc to them. They are true stories, but they are told like little mini movies And again, I have to give all the credit to the people who put the show together, because they really did a brilliant job.
Yeah, it's one of the perks that people forget about, just working behind the people behind the scenes at ESPN are so gifted and so talented. And that's the best part about working. You just work with a bunch of people at the top of their field. So I can imagine how skilled and how specialized they were in that particular arena. Well, Greeny, thank you so much for taking the time. I know you're busy. You're always on air all day, all night. And it was good. And I know our listeners value the insight into what kind of the purpose behind the show and the spirit behind it. I know they're excited to watch.
I hope so. Look, I mean, there are lots of outlets now, and I think an increasing number for people who are interested in the more refined and nuanced gambling discussion. But I'm glad that we were able to, I think in its own way, incorporating gambling into something that is this mainstream. I mean, the show is a very mainstreamy kind of show. Anyone who watches right. it, and again, I love to hear from people who like it. You can tweet at me. Just use the hashtag Greeny with a Y, and I'll see it. And I love hearing from people what they think of the show. And I'd particularly be interested to hear from the people who would listen to this podcast. I would sense that, you know, you're really people who care about the gambling and gambling culture, what you think of it, because my goal with it was to bring gambling into a very mainstream place. It doesn't get a whole lot more mainstream, candidly, than me. And it doesn't get a whole lot more mainstream than the approach we took to this show. And hopefully that'll be a good thing. And as I say, I think casting a bright light on something that has always been sort of kept in the darkness and the shadows, in my personal opinion, unnecessarily, I think will be a good thing too. So hopefully we're doing a little bit of that as well.
Well, no, that's a great point. And I think you experiencing it with the viewer, the whole thing was super likable, even the Steve and then yourself. I just think the whole thing was fun. And it was, to your point, broad, if you will. So look, man, it was great. And thanks for sharing, taking us behind the curtain a little bit. And
how's Vegas, my man? What's our temperature today?
A little over 102. We dipped below 100. I wore jeans the other night. I felt a little weird. It was definitely hot, like getting out of the car the night I wore it. But I mean, it's surreal. The games, I know I grew up in LA, lived out here 7 years, but I'm still having trouble processing how early the games are over. Like, I don't have to stay up till 2 a.m. to watch the end of a Dodgers game or something. It's like 10 o'clock and I'm done. Sometimes, you know, these NBA playoff games, they're done if there's one game. I'm going to get dinner after the games. It's crazy. The big change, obviously, for the better. Football's on earlier, obviously, 9 a.m. on Saturdays. But I'm excited. I think I found a place. We're going to be moving in soon. I'm excited about that and just to get situated. But the show's great. The studio's great. I'm sure you've seen video of it. I'm spoiled. It's kind of like the seaport of the West with the backdrop, the glass windows, and it's awesome.
It's great. I'm thrilled for you. I think you and I talked about this before you were going out there. I think it's fantastic. Congratulations. I wish you nothing but success out there. And I will come out and see you as soon as I can. Once this crazy is all behind us and traveling takes on a little bit of a different feel, I am looking forward to coming out and seeing you.
Well, I thank you and your support to get up. And, you know, I came down to the city a few times for that. And just it's all part of the growth within the ESPN ecosystem and just all of our platforms. So I appreciate you opening, you're with wide open arms for us.
Well, thanks for having me on. Good to see you, Doug. Right.
You too, Greeny. Thank you.
You can also catch Greeny on his ESPN podcast, I'm Interested. Go listen and subscribe as well.
All right. Once again, thanks to Mike Greenberg. He is obviously very busy, so nice of him to take some time to come on the podcast, make his debut here on the Behind the Bets podcast. And before we get to John Murray, I want to remind everyone to go check out another ESPN podcast that will help you with fantasy football teams. Make sure you're staying up to date on all your fantasy football news with ESPN fantasy experts Matthew Berry, Field Yates, Stefania Bell, Mike Clay, and Daniel Dopp on the Fantasy Focus Football Podcast. You'll get daily strategy, previews, and injury reports to ensure you have all the information you'll need for your fantasy football team. Be sure to download and subscribe to Fantasy Focus Football and Behind the Bets on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
He started as a ticket writer.
Well, the handle has gotten a lot higher here in the last hour.
Now he's a race and sportsbook director.
I have the guys at work here calling me Mr. Director and not looking directly into my eyes.
With people.
Brought in a whole new staff this year. It's kind of a Seinfeld-esque move where we just rotate the guys so the material doesn't get stale, Doug.
What happened in between? A hot tub and ESPN.
Kicking is for losers.
Kicking is certainly for losers, although not applicable with the Tennessee Titans, who did squeeze out a victory on Monday night despite all the kicking issues. However, the Lions deciding to kick up 10 late fourth, a 55-yarder or whatever. Murray, what was it like to see all these kicks coming, just hit you like a ton of bricks in week one, and remind you that kicking is for Luther?
You know, my favorite was the Falcons because they had, I think it was a 4th-and-1. It was 0-0, I believe, at the time. And they kicked a 50-yard field goal, and he missed, of course. Like, does Dan Quinn, does he ever learn any lessons, or he just keeps moving forward no matter how many times he messes up?
Well, it's kind of like the functioning alcoholic, right? He's just like the functioning hot seat coach. He only knows how to coach when he's on the hot seat. So getting off the hot seat would just throw him off too much. So I think he just has to make these questionable decisions. They have to be like around 500 or below 500 for things to feel normal, right? Is that a fair assessment?
I guess. I mean, he keeps it interesting by being a complete bonehead. I don't know what he was thinking. The Titans game, certainly they should have won by more than that. Gostkowski, isn't Denver supposed to be the easiest place to kick too? I mean, that's kind of amazing how many kicks he missed. And then the funniest moment of the weekend for me had to have been the missed field goal for the Bengals that would have sent the game to overtime, and the guy missed, like, what was that, about a 30-yard field goal? That was that was my one joy of the weekend was that one. I thought that was hilarious.
The gut-wrenching one was the Lions. Swift dropping that. Just, I feel for you Detroit fans. I really do. I just – it's just not fair sometimes. Sports can be cruel.
Yeah, it's tough. It's so unfair to Stafford because, you know, they give up – first of all, they shouldn't kick that field goal like you mentioned. Then they give up the touchdown that puts the Bears ahead. And then he drops it right into DeAndre Swift's hands for an easy touchdown, and Swift drops the ball. I don't know how much more Matthew Stafford could have done in that game.
Right, but he'll get a loss on his record, right? And as well, Joe Burrow, like I tweeted out, it's just kind of nonsense. But
It is ridiculous. Like, you can't judge quarterbacks just on wins and losses. We've been talking about that for years, but you get reminded of it every week. Yes, it should be one of the things you judge them on, but it cannot be the only thing you judge these guys on. They're so reliant on so many other things that they have no control over.
But imagine outright wins by the Jaguars were helpful. The Washington football team was helpful as well. Arizona, but you guys probably had a little bit of public money on Arizona, no? How did all that treat you?
Well, there were a lot of bets on Arizona on the point spread, but you're right. The 49ers money line, 49ers teasers, excuse me, were popular. The Eagles losing to football team was a really big one for us. The Colts losing was huge. You know, it's funny, the Nuggets and the Clippers played at 10 a.m. Sunday morning. So people were throwing Clippers money line into a lot of their football money line parlays. So that was a huge win for us. Clippers lose game 6 of that best of 7 series.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. That game, the NBA games, as we all know, are around 2.5 hours. So that game was winding down. And I actually tweeted, I'm like, wait a minute, is Denver money line going to really save the books? And then I was like, but then again, like, Colts could lose. And I think there were some other upsets brewing. But
that was a huge win for us. You're not wrong about that. We did take a pretty big loss on the Buffalo game. Buffalo covered pretty easily against the Jets. I said on the show last week that was our widest split of the week. We lost on the Panthers-Raiders game. We lost on the Raiders-Panthers game as well. That was a bad one for us for sure.
Right, because that line opened, pick them, closed like 3, and then they won by 4.
Yeah,
right?
And the public was definitely hitting the Raiders. That didn't do too well on the early Monday night game. Steelers covering against the Giants. The late game we did okay. We had the Broncos did cover for a lot of the people that got in late and laid 3 points with the Titans. That saved us. And again, the funny thing this year that's unique to 2020, our biggest win on Monday night, on a night when there were 2 NFL games, was the Golden Knights lost game 5 to the Dallas Stars in the Western Conference Finals. So that saved the whole day Monday night for us. Just a very weird year. Sunday, a big win for us in the NBA. Monday, a big win for us in the NHL. Never seen that before, obviously, in a September where hockey and basketball can save a football weekend for us.
Yeah. That is
– it's great. It's bizarre. We're doing the show. We're taping the show here Thursday morning in Vegas, week 2 of the NFL season, and I'm watching Phil Mickelson chip out of the rough at winged foot on the 3rd hole. This is a crazy year, to say the least.
It sure is. All right, man. Well, let's look ahead to week 2 in the NFL. Who do you think had the biggest adjustments, good or bad, in the power ratings?
Well, I'd say the team that's that we've downgraded a lot would have to be the Minnesota Vikings. You know, they looked awful. And Sunday morning, they got crushed by the Packers. We got kind of bailed out of that game. We liked the Vikings. We were obviously wrong about that, but we were fortunate. We did have one of our big house players come in, bet the Vikings at kickoff, kind of saved us there. I think they're a team that you'd have to downgrade after week one. As far as teams to upgrade, well, I think the Browns would be another one you'd downgrade. I think the 49ers are a team that's really, really banged up right now. But the public is all coming in to bet on the 49ers like crazy this week. They play at the Jets. I think Washington football team may have surprised some people on Sunday with that win against the Eagles, but I wouldn't upgrade them too much. I thought Haskins looked terrible in that game. And the other thing, more importantly, Philadelphia had so many guys out on their offensive line that I think maybe Washington's defense, even though I like Washington's defense, I don't think they're quite as good as they looked in that game.
Yeah, Sal Palantonio joined me on Daily Wager Sunday morning, called Washington's front four perhaps the best in the division. Maybe not be wrong there, right? But you're right. They're not world beaters. It's not the mean green purple leaders up front necessarily. I would agree with Minnesota. I think the Danielle Hunter injury is significant. I think they have some corner issues. And Kirk, you know, we made a lot of excuses. This was my closing line the other night. We made a lot of excuses for a lot of bad quarterback play last year, like Baker Mayfield. We wanted to blame it on Freddie Kitchens and some of the play calling. Kirk Cousins, we were like, well, he's good in certain situations. And Phillip Rivers, we're like, well, that offensive line with the Chargers was so bad. And what does that mean? The Colts aren't going to ever be blitzed? I mean, the thing is if you stunk last year, you probably just stink. 16 games, look, there may be some adjustments. I know Nick Foles won a Super Bowl, got hot, but pretty much like you are who you are, and we kind of know who the elite quarterbacks are. Russell Wilson, what Bill Belichick said about him being the best player in the league, he might be. There's nobody playing better. He's great. He's plus 650 or so to win the MVP. I think that could go way low if they win this Sunday night. So I just think we made a lot of excuses, myself included, on Kirk Cousins. At the end of the day, we kind of know who these guys are, right?
You know, I agree with that. I mean, I think unless it's a young quarterback, I mean, I think you can make excuses for guys in their first, second year. But other than that, when you start talking about these veteran guys, Kirk Cousins was drafted in 2012, the same draft class when Washington took Robert Griffin III with the second overall pick. There's no more excuses for Kirk Cousins. And the Vikings, they really looked bad this week. And I think you're going to like the stat I have for that Vikings-Colts game this week when we start to break down the week two card. I think you're going to like what I got to say there.
That's what we like to call in the business a deep tease, not just a regular tease. That's a deep tease, so way down the road. But I mentioned Baker Mayfield. Let's get to this Thursday night game, Battle of Ohio. You know, this Cleveland team, I think it's a must win. I don't think they can lose. I just think with the issues could really unravel. I mean, you can always make the playoffs from 0-2, especially with an extra wild card in each league. But I do think, like, the OBJ and the pressure mounting, and given it's Cincy and given it's at home, I think it's a must win.
Well, I don't disagree with that. I mean, it's kind of early to say that. We're talking about week two here. But if they can't beat the Bengals at home, where are they going to find wins in the AFC North? Pittsburgh looked really good on Monday night. You know Baltimore is going to be one of the best teams in the NFL. But where is Cleveland going to be able to win division games if they can't win this game against the Bengals, Joe Burrow's first NFL road start? Public's been taking – they've been taking the Bengals a little bit here. I'm not saying it's a wide ticket count, but we are seeing more support for the Bengals on the point spread. Now, the Browns' money line is starting off a lot of money line parlays and a lot of teasers going into Sunday. So my guess would be by the time this game kicks off, our best outcome would be a Bengals straight-up win. But there is a lot of support for the Bengals plus the 6 points as well.
Interesting. That surprises me. I know they looked okay and all that. I know the Browns looked how they looked, but that does still surprise me. You know, all things.
Well, we got to see how the Bengals do. I mean, Tyrod Taylor looked so bad for the Chargers on Sunday. Right. But we got to see how the Bengals look in this game. I mean, Taylor probably shouldn't be playing, starting in the NFL right now, frankly. Right. At some point, if you want to let me rant, I'd love to rant about how my guy Jameis Winston isn't starting in the NFL right now. I watched so many quarterbacks over the weekend that Jameis is way better than. Tyrod Taylor for sure. Jameis is much better than he is. And not, I'm not picking on Taylor. There's a bunch of other guys that fall into that category. Well, what is Jameis doing holding a clipboard right now?
Well, he's trying to win a ring, and he is legitimate insurance on a guy in his 40s, right? Like, yeah. I think, given what happened,
Drew Brees didn't
year.
Look very good either. Drew Brees didn't look too good on Sunday either. I know everybody was quick to dump on Brady because the Patriots, the Buccaneers lost that game, but Drew Brees didn't exactly light the world on fire himself.
No, no, he did not. But it's just week one. Saints are historically slow starters. We'll see.
True.
See, man.
That is a good
point. I
think
the Browns are the only side you can play. I really do, because I think they actually took care of business last year in these types of games. You might remember they struggled out of the gates last year, then pummeled the Jets on Monday night with a backup quarterback. And then they just beat up on bad teams last year, too. So it was when they were
dogs. Yeah, Freddie Kitchens, I don't think, is capable of taking care of business, Doug. I don't think he's. But, yes, they did. They handled the Jets. I think that was week two or week three on Monday night when the Jets were down to, like, their third quarterback.
Then the other ones, like, they had a nice win against Buffalo. They beat Pittsburgh at home. Remember, Pittsburgh had terrible quarterback play. They beat the Dolphins by 17. Yep. They beat the Bengals by 8 at home. They always, like, beat the bad teams, and then – they really struggled. They never had a chance against some of the, like, mediocre. So they, like, got blown out in week one to Tennessee, lost to the Rams, lost to the Niners, lost to the Seahawks, lost to the Patriots, lost to the Broncos in Denver, and then lost at Pittsburgh, lost at Arizona, lost to Baltimore, and then since in week 17, a game that didn't matter. So I think it's this when they, like, have a chance to play bully, they do, and I think this is it.
Okay. I mean, we'll see. I don't think it's going to be a huge decision for the house tonight. We've got game 6 of the Eastern Conference Finals in hockey. A lot of money coming in on game 2 of the Eastern Conference Finals in the NBA, Miami and Boston. So that's going to take away a little bit of the handle from the NFL game, plus the fact that the NFL game is terrible will also hurt handle on tonight's NFL game.
Okay. All right. So, yeah, I'm not playing Cleveland, but that would be the only side. Like, in a pick 'em, I'm taking them. All right, let's go to Sunday. So, really interesting reaction. I believe the Eagles were 2.5-point favorites, and now they are a pick 'em and even a 1-point dog.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, we had this line as high as Philadelphia -4 when we put it out in the spring and the summer, and we didn't really see any sharper guys taking the Rams. They could have taken Rams +4 most of the summer, and they didn't do that. And now Philadelphia loses to Washington. They did that with a lot of guys hurt. The Rams, let's say, escaped on Sunday Night Football against the Dallas Cowboys. I think this is a classic week 2 overreaction line. You see that maybe going from week 1 to week 2 more than any other week. And I think we're definitely seeing that in this game. We used Philadelphia -1 for the Super Contest here at the Westgate, because even though we have pick 'em on the board, we do think this number is going to drift up between now and Sunday. We think the sharper guys are going to take Philadelphia in this game.
So you think Philly's going to move towards
I do. I think it's going to move up. You know, if you look at the splits for the Eagles when Lane Johnson plays and when Lane Johnson doesn't play, it's staggering how much better they are as a football team with Lane Johnson in there. He's on track to play on Sunday. I'd keep a close eye on that. If he gets ruled out, I would bail out of the Eagles. But as of right now, we do think this number is going to move up, and we think the Eagles are a sharp side on Sunday morning.
And if those wondering, this applies to the Rams and even the Niners later. So that early start time with the team on the West Coast going east.
Yep.
The start of last season. So all of last season and week 1, the West Coast teams going to play a 1 Eastern road game are 11-4-1 ATS. Over the last 5 years, they're 26-20 straight up, 26-17-3 ATS. So a little bit of misconception. But also remember, we talked about how the road team is now much more a better bet now on the level or playing field with the travel conditions over the last 5 to 10 years. So that's a lot of that's just like the road team getting too many points in all settings. That adjustment of the time zone, not what it once was.
So. No, clearly not. Home field advantage in general, probably not worth what it used to be, especially in this 2020 season.
Okay, next game, Carolina at Tampa. Sounds like this Tampa line's moving up, huh?
Well, we actually came down a little bit. We came down from 9.5 down to 8.5. We did get as low as 8. We moved back up to 8.5. I'm going to be curious to see how people play this outside of, I know Tampa Bay is going to be included in a lot of money line parlays and teasers, but I will be curious to see how many people make big straight bets on the Buccaneers in this game, considering how poor their offense looked on Sunday and that loss to the Saints.
But shouldn't we give the Saints some credit there?
We should, and you're right. And I think everybody was quick to dump on Brady in that game, but you got to give New Orleans some credit for their defensive performance. And I'd also, again, look at Drew Brees. He didn't exactly play well, but Brady certainly struggled in that game for sure. But Carolina's in a different place than the Saints are. Carolina's a rebuilding team. The Saints are a team that's playing for a Super Bowl this season.
Well, baby bankroll bonanza got a nice win on the over. How bad did that Carolina defense look?
They did not look good, that's for sure. The Raiders moving the ball up and down the field in that game. Could be a long year for Carolina, but I do trust that coaching staff in Carolina. I don't want to write them off too much after just one game.
Fair enough. I think that's fair. I'm moving to the next game. Sorry, I just think that Tampa Bay defense is better than we thought. And we kind of said that going in, so they looked pretty good at times. So I'm interested to see if they not led by Drew Brees and that Saints and then Michael Thomas moving forward. Okay, Pittsburgh. I think there's a little bit of an over-adjustment. -7 here against Denver. Feels high for a Denver team that I thought was pretty sharp at times.
They did, and also that Pittsburgh score – might have been a little misleading. You know, Daniel Jones had that horrible interception at the goal line.
Yes.
I think that was might have been early in the fourth quarter. I don't remember exactly, but really bad an interception at the goal line there for Daniel Jones. Excuse me, or maybe that could have been a different result for the Steelers. A lot of guys hurt for Denver, though. Cortland Sutton, KJ Hamler both listed as questionable. Philip Lindsay's out. Obviously, we know Von Miller's out. A lot of guys are hurt for the Broncos, so keep an eye on that injury report. Denver, that you saw that line move so much in week one against the Titans because of all the guys that were out for the Broncos, it's a lot to ask of them to go on the road on a short week and play at Pittsburgh without all those guys that they were missing on Monday Night Football.
Yeah, no, I do agree with you that that was a fortunate cover, but it's fortunate, but like it was probably the right side, but I know what you mean. But they didn't punch it in when they got the muff punt inside the five. They settled for a field goal, things like that. So you're right.
Yeah.
Don't overreact. But that Pittsburgh defense did look legit. I was really impressed.
Pittsburgh defense was great last year, Doug. You know, the fact that team almost made the playoffs last year with just one of the most ridiculous 1-2 combinations of quarterback you could ever see in the NFL between Mason Rudolph and Duck Hodges. And they still almost got to the postseason in a good division. That should give you an indication of just how good that Pittsburgh defense is.
Speaking of Dan Quinn and the Falcons, as you mentioned earlier, they're in Dallas. Yeah. So is that tricky line, a 4.5?
Yeah. And a fun coaching matchup for me personally. I'll enjoy this. Dan Quinn against Mike McCarthy. I can only imagine the blunders that I'll get to laugh about on Sunday. Haven't seen a lot of money on the point spread in this game yet. Did see some sharp money come in over 51. That was early in the week. That total right now at this book at least is 52.5. The sharp money we saw was over 51. Falcons Cowboys.
Okay. This is a game I really like. If you're into money lines, if you're into teasers, I just do not see how the Niners lose this game. They're at the Jets. No Le'Veon Bell. He's on the IR out a few games at minimum. And the Jets, are they the worst team in your power ratings?
Well, I would just be a little careful here with the 49ers. Keep an eye on George Kittle. He's questionable with a knee injury. Richard Sherman's out. Debo Samuel's out. A lot of guys are out for the Niners. Jimmy Garoppolo did not exactly look great on Sunday in that loss to Arizona. And we are seeing a 17-1 ticket count on the 49ers here. We got the Niners -7 even money. They will be a very popular money line parlay teaser option. Are the Jets the worst team in the league? They might have the worst coach in the league. You know how I feel about Adam Gase. I'm not ready to call them the worst team in the league yet, but with Jacksonville winning and Washington winning, it's possible. It's still early though. The Jets looked so bad in that first half. I mean, that first half they made Josh Allen look like a Pro Bowl quarterback. It is ridiculous.
they're really bad. The Jets are really bad. I like the under in that game. Here's a fun stat that's applicable. Okay, so teams that went to the playoffs and then lost week one opener. Okay?
Yeah.
So quote unquote good teams lose the opener of the following season. In week two, 18-9 ATS over that span.
Yeah, that's good. I just my concern, like I said though, with the Niners would just be that injury report. Keep an eye on, they've got Jimmy Garoppolo is not somebody that can carry an offense without good weapons around him, at least not in my opinion. And he's got a lot of guys banged up. A lot of his top targets are banged up in this game. But I would always be comfortable going against Adam Gase. I would certainly find some comfort there.
This has like 23-6 written all over in my world, but okay.
It's hard to imagine the Jets moving the ball against 49ers defense. I'm with you on that.
Yeah, I like the under, and to your point, I think Shanahan knows that his hands are tied a little bit on offense. No Kittle and just having Garoppolo. I think he's going to run the ball like a million.
He should.
Okay, intriguing line here. Buffalo, we have Nick Bogdanovich from Caesars William Hill coming on the show later today, and we got some graphics ready. Mm-hmm. He has the Bills in his top five power ratings at number five. Bills -5.5 at Miami.
Well, Buffalo looked very good defensively on Sunday. I mean, I know we just got done making fun of the Jets, but let's give some credit to the Bills defense. Josh Allen looked really good on Sunday. I know he had a bad fumble on the first drive and he missed a couple throws, but I thought overall he played a very good game. So if Josh Allen can move into a point where he's maybe a middle of the road starting quarterback in the league, I don't see why Buffalo couldn't be a top five team in the league. With that defense, I like Sean McDermott. All they need out of Josh Allen is to be basically a middle of the road quarterback, and I don't see why he can't do that. The public definitely likes the Bills this week. They're about a 15-1 ticket count here at the Westgate. Everybody's on Buffalo. We're going to need Miami, I think, pretty big in this early game. We needed the Jets big last week against Buffalo. They didn't help us out. I think we're going to see a similar thing here where the books are rooting against the Bills on Sunday.
Wow. You know, the Jets have a way of making everyone look good, so let's not
I agree. I know, you're right. Be careful overreacting to week one. Doug, you're totally right about that. Let's not go nuts here. Let's not crown Josh Allen just because he carved up the New York Jets. Let's see what he does this week.
A team that both looked bad in week one and hurt some survivor pools and just hurt some money. We talked about them already. The Colts hosting the Vikings. Colts -3 here.
Yeah, and the public is loving that dog. And that's why I teased it a little bit here. Over 5-1 ticket count on the Minnesota Vikings in this game. They're getting 3 points at the Colts. Minnesota looked awful. They got destroyed by Green Bay. And we saw that line move against them at the end there. That's a bad sign for the Vikings. I don't know what the hell to say about the Colts. How can you lose to Jacksonville in that spot? Jacksonville, the team that most people are basically saying is tanking for Trevor Lawrence, and the Colts go out and lose week one to the Jaguars. Books are going to need the Colts here. The public looks like they are lining up on the dog Vikings, and I know that's your favorite situation in the NFL.
Oh, that is dangerous. That is dangerous. Oh, it's with stronger stomachs than I have. Stronger stomachs. All right. Well,
backing Philip Rivers, you're putting too much money on Philip Rivers right now. That would be scary, I think. There's got to be a better place to sink your money, man.
I would agree with that. Speaking of quarterbacks, I said at the beginning of the year that I was surprised that Aaron Rodgers was about 25-1 to win the MVP, just because in those one-way betting markets, I thought you could get away with 15-1. I didn't think you had to juice them, but he's come down to around 15-1 after an impressive opener. So Packers are laying 6 now to the Lions, which is just coming off that heartbreak we alluded to earlier.
Yeah, well, what a bad loss for the Lions. We got Aaron Rodgers at 16-1 at the Superbook to win the MVP, and part of the reason it's so high, honestly, we don't really have many bets on him. Nobody was really taking Aaron Rodgers to win the MVP, at least not at this book. As for week two, Green Bay is a 6-point favorite here. You know the public's going to be on Green Bay in this game for sure. They looked so good in week one. And the Lions, as usual, blew it in the end. We'll need the Lions. Probably going to be one of our bigger decisions in the morning, I think.
Okay, so you think it's just going to keep coming in on them?
I definitely think so. I mean, the Packers are always a very popular team. And the Lions, that epic loss on Sunday, I can't imagine too many people are going to be running in here to bet on the Lions.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that front. But, I mean, the question is, like, how do they react in such a gut punch game? You know, that's the other question. It's like, oof, I don't want to, like.
Yeah. No, I hear you. And we're about to go to the next game, Giants-Bears. And
let's go to that.
I'd like to know what that line would have been if the Lions didn't just completely collapse in the fourth quarter. What if the Lions just close out and beat the Bears 23-6? I don't know that the Bears would be laying 5.5 points in this week two game against the Giants.
Yeah, that's a lot of points for Mitchell Trubisky. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. And the fact that the Giants really had every opportunity to cover that week one game against Pittsburgh, even though what were Saquon Barkley's numbers in that game? Saquon, like 20 carries for 5 yards?
Yeah. And then Mike Tomlin, I heard a quote. I heard the sound after the game on radio when I was driving around. Tomlin was like, yeah, we know how good they are. We know how good he is, and where their bread is buttered, and we weren't going to let him beat us. And they basically said Daniel Jones, go to town. They're like, Daniel Jones, all you, buddy.
Just Barkley to me seems like a guy that once a game he'll break a long run on either a screen pass or a carry, but for the most part doesn't really do much, at least from what I've seen. But I think that I talked to some people that think the Giants could be a good dog play here, maybe getting too many points against the Chicago Bears, who are coming off of a, let's call it a fortunate win, because DeAndre Swift certainly should have come down with that football to win the game for the Lions.
No doubt. I think the Giants are going to be a good bet on team. I'm not quite ready to do it week two, but I think they're going to have a nice coverage like mid-season on. I think the Giants team, they're going under their win total. I think it's a brutal schedule, but I think they're going to be a bet on team. I think they're going to get a lot better on both sides of the ball, but I think their offense will put up some points too. Jacksonville at Tennessee. Tennessee short week. Jags, huge win at home. Going nuts, but that's a big number for the Titans, but I want no part of the Jags at 8.5.
It's a number that's come down. This number was as high as 11. Tennessee right now is an 8.5-point favorite. Probably going to be one of the least bet games of the week, given that it's at 10 a.m., given that it's involving the Jacksonville Jaguars. My guess would be you're going to see a lot of money line parlays, a lot of teasers with Tennessee. Teasing Tennessee down to 2.5 in a 6-point teaser, that could be a good move. Otherwise, don't have too many opinions on this game, and there's just not that much action on it.
Yeah, no, it's kind of a boring game. It's kind of just weird. Nobody likes the Jaguar games. Your first-place Washington football team.
Yeah.
Hats in 6.5 in Arizona. Now, I usually don't like delay points with, like, Arizona off a big road win coming home, but Washington's off a similar type big win, although at home. I think this has got Arizona teaser and money line written all over.
A good win for the team there last week against the Eagles. They're getting 6.5 points this week. Don't be shocked if that number goes to 7. In fact, I see it's going to 7 in a lot of the offshore books as I say that right now. I think you're going to get pretty much nothing but Arizona money. Arizona off of such a good win on the road over the 49ers like that. Kyler Murray looked good. My man Larry Fitzgerald with the big heads-up play there at the end of the game. Good game from DeAndre Hopkins. A lot of weapons on that Cardinals team. And I know the books are going to need the football team pretty big in this one.
Yeah, so let's talk about that. Kyler Murray's MVP odds came down, right?
Yeah, I mean, Kyler Murray, second-year quarterback. We just saw a second-year quarterback who also was a Heisman Trophy winner go nuts and win the MVP. So you got to be careful here with Kyler Murray. You don't want to see you don't want to get in too deep on him. We already did that last year with Lamar Jackson. That didn't work out too well for us. So we got to be careful here with Kyler Murray. Right now we've got him all the way down to 12-1 to win the MVP.
Now the difference was last year, it was a team that ended up getting the one seed, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you anticipate that with the Cardinals? No, obviously.
So, no, I don't. No, I don't. But we just want to be careful with these quarterbacks on these quarterbacks that are capable of putting up explosive numbers. Like, I think Kyler Murray is capable of that. And we just want to try to direct the bets more to other positions other than these quarterbacks. But no, I don't think Arizona can realistically challenge to be the number one seed. I do agree with you on that.
Right. Right. So that was my question, is how do you balance all that when you know the Cardinals probably aren't going to be that high in terms of the seeding, but you also don't want to be too liable either.
Well, the good thing right now is you've got a number of contenders at the very top, talking about Mahomes, Jackson, and Wilson. You can offer fair odds on really all those guys because there's no one clear-cut guy that's that far ahead of the pack, although we are only 1 week into the season here. So, okay. I mean, that could change pretty quickly.
Okay, good stuff.
We also were able to bump up, and we can bump up guys like Deshaun Watson, Dak Prescott, Carson Wentz, Drew Brees, who we talked about earlier, and Tom Brady. Tom Brady's a guy we got our biggest liability, one of our biggest liabilities is on Tom Brady. And I think we can comfortably bump him up after what we saw in week one. We moved him up to 30-1 from 16-1.
I can see that. All right, man. So Baltimore and Houston, and even seven here. I think we need to just start taking advantage of Baltimore in the regular season. They've won 13 straight regular season games dating back to last year. And I've said it time and time again, this type of unique offense, you need all hands on deck on D, extreme discipline, extreme focus in the film room all week. I think you only get that kind of stuff in the postseason. I just think Baltimore is a regular season machine. I think I have to tease them heavy as we tease ahead to maybe bankroll Bonanza. I think Baltimore in a teaser.
Yeah, and expect Baltimore to be a very popular teaser play, moneyline parlay play, survivor play. And people are just hammering the point spread, too. We got the Ravens as a 7-point favorite right now. I wouldn't be shocked if that number went up. Everybody's betting the Ravens like crazy here. About a 10-to-1 ticket count. Well, the Texans didn't exactly inspire too much confidence on Thursday night. I don't think much of Bill O'Brien. We've documented that on the show. And the Ravens, they're just a machine right now. I think the books are going to need – the Texans may be our second biggest need of the week. The biggest need of the week is going to be the next game on the schedule here.
Ooh, before we get to that, what's your ticket count on the Texans Ravens?
It's almost 10-1 on the Ravens. Not quite 10-1, but almost.
All right, you teased it. Now we go to the next game. Kansas City, the most public team at Chargers. And I want to ask you, it's 8.5 here. Question for you, as a odds maker and a bookmaker more so, that's the question is, look, they've won and covered 10 straight games dating back to last year. Now, obviously, I understand a playoff run could incorporate that, but they've won and covered 10 straight. They're a public team. How do you, like, handle this, like, ticket count and disparity when you know they're coming in and they're cashing?
Well, we've already moved it up. We had this number at 6.5 before week one. Kansas City with a big win on Thursday night. The Chargers' offense looked so inept in their win over the Cincinnati Bengals. So you see this number go all the way up to 8.5. Could it go even higher? I mean, I wouldn't be shocked to see it go higher. Right now, ticket count is over 25-1 on the Chiefs. Mercy. Nobody's looking to bet against the Kansas City Chiefs right now, especially on a team that offensively can't do anything. We'll say this too. We saw a sharp group go over 46.5 in this game. We're at 47.5 right now. So you might be looking at a high scoring game here, at least according to this group we respect. That favors the Chiefs as well, obviously, because Patrick Mahomes should have a lot more success in this game than whoever's under center for the Chargers.
So it sounds like the five most notable ticket counts we've talked about are all road teams too, Chiefs. Niners,
yeah, road favorites are what the public lives for in the NFL, and that's always been the case. I mean, we were laughing on Sunday morning, we kept getting alerts about all these different players out of the game for the Eagles, and the public was just running in to lay the Eagles anyway. Because they were a road favorite, and everybody thought Washington was going to suck. And Washington still might be bad, but it's just people are not that price sensitive. They're not really paying that much attention to the injury report. They're just looking to parlay together all the road favorites. And what happens is once or twice a year, all those road favorites cover, and the books get demolished. I'm not saying that's going to happen this week. I hope it doesn't, but that does seem to happen at least one or two times a year.
But nowadays you have a lot of other sports to balance it out, not just baseball.
True, yeah.
NBA and NHL. Okay, Sunday night game. I know a sharp group played Seattle that moved this from 3.5 to 4. Mm-hmm. I kind of like the Seahawks, but I can't lay 4 here, but I kind of wouldn't be – I think they're going to cover it.
Yeah, did see respected play on Seattle, -3.5. You're right. We moved that number to 4. I don't think people really know what to make of the Patriots. A good win on Sunday, but just beating the Dolphins at home isn't going to move the needle too much. Russell Wilson, 31 for 35 on the road against Atlanta last Sunday. Looked incredible. Books are going to need the Patriots for sure here.
So you think they'll need the Patriots, even as a dog? Historically, Belichick has been excellent. Yeah. interesting just because Seattle.
I definitely think so, yeah. I mean, we're seeing all the money coming in on Seattle right now. It's not going to be as one-sided as what we saw last Sunday night where everybody bet Dallas. I don't think it's going to be like that. But I do think I do think we'll be rooting for New England when the game kicks off.
Everyone bet Dallas, but the Sharps moved, were on the Rams and moved that to pick them, huh?
Well, the sharp groups just would not stop taking the Rams. I mean, no matter it was a very much a sharp versus square standoff. But it's an NFL game, you know. If they had maybe not called that offensive PI, maybe it would have been the squares that got the money there,
right,
instead of the sharper groups that were on the Rams. So it's not like the Rams cruised to victory. I remember last year we had that one Sunday night game where all the squares were taking New England at Baltimore. And Baltimore plus three was like the sharpest play of the year in the NFL, and the Ravens rolled them. This game, this past Sunday night, was nothing like that. That game could have easily gone either way.
Although I maintain that Patriots game could have kind of gone either way. I mean, just they got that score before halftime, and then the opening drive they squandered an opportunity. I think it was maybe a turnover strip. Whatever.
Yeah, like that. You're right.
Clearly the better team.
Baltimore won that game. But just look at it like this. At the end of the season, how ridiculous did New England minus three at Baltimore look as a point spread? I mean, by the end of the year, that line just looked absurd.
Yeah, well said. At the end of the year, it looked absurd as right. All right, let's round things out. Right where I am, we currently are in Las Vegas. The Raiders, the home opener at the Big Al. I got New Orleans in town. No Michael Thomas. Now, we know non-quarterbacks aren't worth that much to the point spread, but I heard on another radio show that it was about a half point. Is that fair for Thomas, a half point to the spread?
I do think that's fair. I think you're looking at maybe about a half a point difference there. Michael Thomas is one of the elite receivers in the league. And frankly, Drew Brees looked like he could need all – he looks like he needs all the help he can get from what I saw on Sunday. The public is betting the Saints. They're a 5.5-point favorite on the road. It's not super one-sided. It's nothing like those other ticket counts that we talked about earlier on the show. But I do expect the books to need the Raiders here. Probably a lot of money line parlays from the weekend closing with the Raiders. I'm sorry, with the Saints making us need the Raiders. Because you're right. There's a lot of road favorites this week getting the money from the public. So you're going to see a lot of these road favorites getting parlayed together, closing with New Orleans.
What do you think this number closes?
Well, that's what my point is. If these all these other road favorites cover on Sunday, I mean, you could see this thing drift up towards seven. If all those teams cover, I mean, that's very unlikely. But if you see, San Francisco and Baltimore and Kansas City all cover and all these parlays are rolling in, Buffalo, all these parlays rolling in New Orleans, this thing's going to go up. I mean, I'm already seeing sixes in a lot of books in town. I don't think seven is completely out of the question, although I doubt it'll get that high.
Yeah, it's tough to get past that. Although key number of six, or no, there was four that surprised me. Wasn't that common of a margin of victory over the years. So yeah. I did not see that coming, so to speak. All right, my friend. Before we get to Baby Bankroll Bonanza, you mentioned the Chiefs were 25-1 ticket count. Is that as high as you've ever seen?
Well, it's still early in the week. I know that sounds funny. We're recording it Thursday morning in Las Vegas. The huge majority of the tickets that we see on an NFL game are bet on Saturday and Sunday. So right now, it's just a small fraction of what we're going to take on the game. So I'm just cautioning you that the split will tighten as we take more tickets. The percentage will tighten. But yes, it's very unusual to be that 25-1 is still very surprising, even early in the week.
Gotcha. All right, my friend, let's hit it.
It's time for Baby Bankroll Bonanza.
Okay, it is that exciting time of the show where we get our plays down. And Murray, I am in first place. It's been a while. Feels good. Feels good to be on top. My over in the Raiders-Panthers game got there. Your Vikings disappointed.
Yeah, you know, that Vikings pick, God, what a bad pick. Yeah, and we gave it to, or I gave it to Brent Musburger on VSiN last Wednesday with Matt Eumanns. And the pick was so bad that Brent actually called into the show yesterday, I guess, to like hover over me to make sure I made a better pick for this week. What an absolutely terrible pick Vikings was. The market moved against it. They got crushed. I mean, it just doesn't get any worse than that. Like we talked earlier about the Rams-Cowboys game. If you took Rams plus three, even if they'd lost on that last drive, you could know that you did the right thing because the Rams closed favored in that game, right, at least. But if you took Vikings and the market moved against you and they got steamrolled, you're just a loser that made a losing pick. And that's what I was last week. Bad pick.
That's fair. But I would say, are the numbers, like, you know, when you say they closed the favorite, you know, we want to assume 50-50 mm-hmm. at the closing number. But I think week one is not as tight, right? It's like 16-15. So.
I don't know. I mean, in some ways, week one can be very tight because the lines have been up since May. The Vikings was a bad pick. I told Brent I think it was the worst pick I'd made for him in the 4 years that I've been doing that show with him. So hopefully we do better this week.
Wow. Worst pick ever. Interesting. Yeah.
And he didn't disagree. You know, he didn't stop me. So
no,
I think.
He didn't sympathize. He was peeved.
No. It wasn't like, no, don't be ridiculous, John. It was more of just a simple head nod from the great Brent Musburger.
He's like, I'm glad you recognize it. All right, I'm gonna go Murray limits now. I'm gonna go up to a dime on this one because I really feel strongly about it. I'm gonna do a teaser.
Okay.
I'm picking the Niners down to one and the Baltimore Ravens down to one. I just don't see how the Niners lose this game. I just think all hands on deck. They're coming on a business trip, the wolf and tail, and go back home 1-1. I just think you get your best effort, albeit on a banged up team and a limited offense and a limited quarterback. But it's the Jets. Mm-hmm. You cannot mess around. Darnold obviously does have some moments, and he could be good. We're not sure yet. But I just think I trust the Niners. I trust Shanahan. I trust this team to go in and whoop ass, so to speak. So, and then I have to take the Ravens. I think Houston's competent. Obviously, they didn't look that great against the Chiefs of all teams. But I think this Ravens team is a force. I think Harbaugh's got them coming early, and I expect them to win the game against a Bill O'Brien team that's got limitations.
Well, I'm with you on the Ravens. I'd be shocked if Houston put up a fight against Baltimore in that game. Houston looks like a team. I mean, the NFL didn't do them any favors starting them off with the Chiefs and the Ravens. That's for sure. But they look like a team that's going to be facing an uphill battle to make the playoffs. The Niners would concern me just because of the guys we talked about earlier on the show that are banged up. Mm-hmm. So without George Kittle, he's questionable with the knee injury. Not a lot of offensive weapons for Jimmy G. We'll see. I'd keep an eye on the injury report as we get closer to Sunday on that game.
Fair point. So I'm on a dime for that teaser. What about you, my friend? How do you get back in the black?
Well, the play I gave to Mr. Musburger, I'm going to go with it on this show as well. I gave him the Philadelphia Eagles. We talked about it earlier. I think it's an overreaction in the number. And I'm going to go with the Eagles. Pick them. I'll do that one as well for $1,100 to win a dime. Well, pretty much every book in Nevada has the game at a pick. It looks like Caesars right. is dealing at Philadelphia minus one, but we have a pick here at the Westgate on the Eagles.
I'll give you the plus one. It's a respected book in town. We could get plus one.
Oh, no. They've got, just to clarify, they have minus one. Philadelphia minus one at Caesars.
Oh, okay. Well, there is a plus one out there at BetMGM.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Okay, hey, what the hell? I can use eight. After Sunday, I can use every point I can – Right. You'll give me. It looks like Treasure Island has plus one. Treasure mm-hmm. Island has plus one too. Yeah, I'm good. Eagles plus one.
DraftKings does too in the national market. So we're okay there.
Okay, I'll take that plus one. I could use that extra point.
All right, sir. Great stuff as always. Good to have the ref league or whatever you call it back. More kicking for losers. It's good. It's good. The world is feeling normal again.
You must be riding high, DK, because I'll say this. The sea has parted for a certain basketball team you grew up rooting for. And we've talked about LeBron for years on this show. He never really has gotten those breaks in the playoffs. You know, it's always been like his teammates have been the ones hurt and nobody else ever knocked out the top seed for him. You know what I mean? He always had to do it the hard way. But this year, the Bucks are out. The Clippers are out. Anthony Davis is healthy. Everything is there for LeBron James to bring the title back to L.A. So pressure's on you, my friend.
What do you guys have, a minus 350, Lakers to win it all?
Right now, I think we're at minus 180. We are trying to write some money against that, though, because we let's say that we're stuck on the Lakers and leave it at that.
Yeah.
You know, I thought all year, I'd be the first to admit it. I thought all year the Clippers were going to beat the Lakers. I've been saying that since the preseason. I thought the Clippers had more depth. I thought that they would get it done. And, you know, I don't know that Denver can beat the Lakers. I mean, hopefully I'm wrong about that, because the books certainly will be rooting for anybody to knock out the Lakers for us. But right now, the path is there for the Los Angeles Lakers to win this title.
You know, it's bittersweet because I also have I've been on record on a lot of radio shows saying they're not going to win it again in my lifetime, because this was back when the Jim Buss nonsense was going on. It's just so difficult. I had no idea they'd be able to get LeBron and then get AD. I just think it's so difficult. And we usually see about four teams win per decade, four franchises, I should say. So I was pessimistic, but you're right. It does feel good to have Lakers kind of back good again. And I also like the staff. I like the front office. They got rid of Buss. Even Magic being kind of a knucklehead, so like he left. So much I love Magic the player. He was my guy as a kid. It is kind of like this version of the team I do like. It'd be weird if Deion Waiters and J.R. Smith win a ring on the same team. we got a long ways to go. This Nuggets team is
no. There's Cinderella. A long way to go. They got to win 8 basketball games. The very good, very well coached teams: Boston, Miami, Denver, all very well coached. I'm not saying it's over. I'm just saying that I thought LeBron James was going to L.A. as like a retirement run. You know, like he delivered the title to Cleveland. I'm going to go live out the rest of my life in L.A., play some basketball out there. I also thought he was probably done as a very top-end player. He's in year 17. Yeah. I'm amazed what that man is accomplishing, and with the fact that he might be just a couple of weeks away from to bringing a title to the Lakers. It's incredible.
8 more wins to go.
Yes, sir.
8 more wins.
This has been Baby Bankroll Bonanza.
Okay, my friend. Great stuff as always. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, bud. Talk to you next week.
Kicking is for losers.
Okay, so that does it for Baby Bankroll Bonanza and also John Murray. And special thanks again to Mike Greenberg. I do want to mention Mike Clay, who does a wonderful job. He's joined us on the pod a bunch. Didn't get him this week, but he does have a play. We post his prop bets on ESPN.com's chalk section. He likes over receiving yards, not rushing yards, over receiving yards. I believe it's about 22.5, 23.5 for Kareem Hunt. So that's in the Thursday night game. And then the Sunday and Monday games, we'll post. That comes out on Fridays, sort of the prop plays that Mike Clay likes. So check that out for this coming weekend. Thanks to everyone. Also earlier in the week, thanks to Wes, Lou, and Matt, and we'll catch you back here next week, and good luck to everyone this coming weekend.